WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD3 Urbana.
Greetings. Welcome to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, coming to you live today, July 18, 2010, here in WILL AM 580, based in beautiful Urbana, Illinois. Has stupidity become a virtue in the land of the free? Is this truly idiot America? Today's guest has written a book saying that's exactly what's happened. He'll be with us today to explain why it's happened and why that might be something that would concern us all. It's not self-evident. Our guest today, Charles Pierce, joining us on the phone. But first, before we go to him, let's go to Media Minutes.
Any views or opinions expressed by the hosts of Media Minutes are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, its management, or licensee.
Welcome to Media Minutes, a weekly review of news related to media and democracy. I'm Stevie Converse.
And I'm Candace Clement. The largest media merger in a generation is still looming on the horizon, and this week the Federal Communications Commission took their review of the deal on the road. At a public hearing in Chicago, the FCC heard from panelists and Chicago residents about the proposed merger of Comcast, the nation's largest cable provider, with NBC, one of the world's biggest producers of TV shows and motion pictures. Speaking on the panel was Free Press President and CEO Josh Silver, who expressed grave concerns about the deal's impact on creativity and diversity in media.
With increasing broadband speeds, any website could have the reach of a television or radio network, breaking open access and distribution of media content, and allowing anyone with an internet connection to have a voice in the public square. This merger is a direct threat to that historic opportunity.
Comcast's proposed takeover of NBC has received widespread criticism from public interest advocates, consumers, independent programmers, and cable providers. Free Press Associate Program Director Josh Stearns says that the scene in Chicago was no different.
Of the 13 panelists, 10 of them raised really incredible, strong concerns about the merger, both the public interest concerns and the competition concerns.
Chicago would be particularly hard hit by the merger. Should the deal go through, the cable provider, who already dominates the high-speed internet market in the city, would also control the local NBC affiliate and the local Telemundo station. And as Stearns explains, this is a deal that will only be good for one company, Comcast.
Everybody who was at that hearing came from their own individual perspectives and said, you know, as an independent producer, this will hurt me. As an economist, I can see how this is going to create unfair market advantage. As a competitor of Comcast, this will hurt me. As a small cable company, this will hurt me. As a public interest advocate, this is going to hurt the public. And you got this narrative that it seems like everybody sees a danger or a risk in this merger, except for big business.
Policymaking at the behest of the largest companies across industries is threatening our economy, our oceans, our security, and the very viability of our democracy. Just look at the ongoing recession or the disaster in the Gulf of Mexico for the most recent examples. Allowing the Comcast-NBC merger would be yet another giveaway to industry titans at the public's expense.
To learn more about the merger, visit freepress.net/Comcast.
An industry-written bill that would ban municipal broadband projects in North Carolina was pronounced dead this week. The bill would have banned any North Carolina city or county from setting up an external communications system. The state legislature, working through the night to close out its session for the year, flipped the legislation into a study bill in the wee hours of Saturday morning, effectively killing the bill. Catherine Rice is the president of the Southeast Association of Telecommunications Officers and Advisors, which has been opposing the legislation. She said the industry battle against municipal broadband began when the city of Wilson opted to build its own fiber-to-the-home system.
We've actually had four attempts by the industry to pass anti-muni broadband legislation since then. And each time, it's basically the same legislation. In each case, it was basically the industry's attempt to shut down, at the beginning, Wilson, because it was building an infrastructure that was superior to Time Warner's fiber-to-the-home.
Major internet service providers have failed to deliver broadband to many communities across the state, and now these towns want to duplicate Wilson's success by providing broadband themselves.
In North Carolina, we've historically been a tobacco economy, textile tobacco manufacturing, and we've lost all of that to Asia and Mexico. And so these communities have had to look around and figure out ways to keep their economies alive and recognized immediately that we're in an information age and that they needed to build the next roads, which everybody knows around the world are fiber.
Industry isn't just trying to squash muni broadband attempts in North Carolina. 18 other states have already imposed some kind of barrier to community access, thanks to industry lobbying. Texas, Missouri, Arkansas, and Nebraska have created laws banning muni broadband outright. Rice says that with each attempt by industry to kill muni broadband, the coalitions advocating for community access expand. In 2007, the bill was beaten by a grassroots effort. This year, grassroots groups were aided by federal regulators at the FCC and several tech companies.
But we're stronger now, and this is the one thing that our telecom industry does not seem to understand, that every time they do this, every time they try to shut down competition and technological advancement, people learn, people get involved, and our network is now even stronger.
You've been listening to Media Minutes, a production of Free Press, a national nonpartisan organization working to reform the media. For more information, visit freepress.net.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host and the participants.
Okie dokie. Welcome back to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, coming to you live today, July 18, 2010, here in WILL AM 580, based in beautiful Urbana, Illinois, this lovely summer day. Not too long ago, one of my neighbors came up to me and said, you know, Bob, I know you study this sort of stuff. I really think Americans are getting stupider. I just can't believe what's going on in this country today. And he said, can you recommend anything for me to read to sort of explain this process that I see going on around me? And I immediately suggested he get a book by today's guest, Charles Pierce, Idiot America, How Stupidity Became a Virtue in the Land of the Free. And he read it voraciously and enjoyed it. And so it is my pleasure to welcome the author of that book to Media Matters Today. Charles Pierce is a writer for the Boston Globe magazine. He's written about sports and politics. And to many of our listeners, you may be familiar with him as a regular on NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me and Only a Game. Charles Pierce, thank you for joining us this Sunday.
First of all, Bob, what happened to Champaign? How come it's not Champaign-Urbana anymore?
Well, that's a hot...
Was there a civil war that I'm unaware of?
Yeah, you'll have to put that in the next edition of the book, perhaps. that's a major fight here. You're right, it is a civil war, and consider yourself fortunate you're unaware of it.
Okay, that's great. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. And, you know, for people who just say the title, Idiot America, what is an idiot, and why do you call this Idiot America?
Yeah, I don't think I'll listen to your introduction. I don't believe that we are becoming dumber. I just think we're becoming incredibly easy to con. And the reason that we're becoming incredibly easy to con is we don't know any better. And I think that's what the fundamental I set out in the book what I call the three great premises of Idiot America. And I won't bore you by reciting all three of them, but the third one is the most important, which is that fact is what enough people believe, and truth is measured by how fervently they believe it. I mean, I think you're seeing this acted out right now in the immediate moment with this bizarre story about the new Black Panther Party.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knows that story is bunk. Everybody does. Anybody who's been following it knows it's bunk. If you watch the video, the intimidated voters are standing behind these guys talking on their cell phones. However, because enough people believe it and enough people are willing to get on television and say it louder, we have the Washington Post ombudsman saying today that, yes, he thinks his newspaper should have taken a non-story more seriously. If you want to see Idiot America, read Mr. Alexander's column as the ombudsman of the Washington Post today. It's a perfect example of what I meant in the book.
And indeed, I do want to go through all your three great premises. I want to work through the entire argument of the book. And I mean, one of the points you make really well in the book, Charles Pierce, is that, or Charlie, as I guess you prefer to be called.
Yeah, sure.
Is that, you know, sort of goofball, eccentric conspiracies. This is part of the fabric of America from the very beginning. This is not something that's just developed in the last 10 or 20 years. Is that correct?
Well, absolutely right. I mean, as I tell people, the first line when I go to do like a reading from the book or something over the last couple of years is, to be proud of the fact that you live in the greatest country ever devised to be completely out of your mind. Because not only are you encouraged to be out of your mind, you're encouraged to explain to other people why you're not out of your mind, and you're really encouraged to make a buck on it. And that's one of the great things about the country. I mean, there are wild ideas. The progressive income tax was a wild idea at one point. I mean, there are a lot of wild ideas that worked out pretty well. The problem is they don't get tested now. All of our cranks, and I make a distinction between cranks and just kind of boring people that are wrong. All of our cranks now have book contracts, TV shows, and suits in federal court. At which point they just become boring people who are wrong.
And a big part of your argument, Charlie Pierce, in Idiot America, is the role that cable television, talk radio, the internet play in making it possible for cranks to go right into the heart of our culture without passing go.
Yeah, I went to, for the weekend while I was doing the book, a thing called the New Media Conference in New York. And the New Media Conference is not what it sounds like. The New Media Conference is essentially a trade show for a talk show host. And it isn't even really a trade show for a talk show host, because one of the most popular genres, which is all sports talk radio, isn't even represented. It's basically a trade show for people who do quote-unquote issue-oriented talk on their local radio stations, i.e., the baby Limbaughs and baby Hannitys that infest our smaller markets. So anyway, I went there, and it was basically a trade show. They had big plenary sessions, and then they had breakout sessions where you could study different aspects of the business. And as I was looking through the program, I realized there wasn't one breakout session, Bob, that was about any issue these people were going to talk about. I mean, there wasn't a breakout session on global warming or the war or the economy. It was all about how to make your brand better and how to do a better talk show. At which point I realized these people don't really want to know what they're talking about. These people get wealthy not knowing what they're talking about. There was a guy there named Todd Bowers, a great guy who was there. He's an official with the Iraq-Afghanistan Veterans Association who've done, just such a great job over the last few years. And he was like buttonholing people to talk about the wars. And finally I went up to him afterwards and I said, well, did you ever get any time with any of these guys? And he says, well, no, but all of them congratulated me for my service.
Our guest today at Media Matters, Charlie Pierce. Charles Pierce, the author of the book Idiot America, How Stupidity Became a Virtue in the Land of the Free, published by Doubleday. Paperback version just out, is that right?
That's right. Came out in June with special added idiocy because I had to write a new afterword, because if you read the hardcover version of Idiot America,
yep,
the name Glenn Beck doesn't appear anywhere.
I was going to ask you about that. Plus, I expect you've expanded your Sarah Palin.
I had to rewrite the entire chapter on the 2008 elections on deadline because of her.
I can imagine. So we'll be talking about her today. For listeners wishing to call in with a question or comment for Charlie Pierce to talk about Idiot America, How Stupidity Became a Virtue in the Land of the Free, the number here at WILL at Media Matters is 333-9455. Our toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. And, let's just go right into some of this stuff. There's so much in this book, and there's a lot of history, and I do want to touch on a lot of it. But just to give some sense of Idiot America, a lot of the book you talk about intelligent design, evolution, and how this sort of position's been mainstreamed. And this seems to be sort of a driving theme in the book. Could you just talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, well, I mean, intelligent design is basically a sales technique. It's a way to sell creationism without sounding like creationism, because people react badly. It's a focus group technique. And the example I use in the book is the great, and I think all of your listeners are probably familiar with the intelligent design case in Dover, Pennsylvania, where mm-hmm. a fundamentalist Christian faction took over the school board and tried to force an intelligent design, i.e. creationist textbook, and into the curriculum. They got sued. Nobody wanted to settle. It went to federal court. They got clobbered in federal court by a great judge, a Republican-appointed judge, I might add, named John Jones. And one of the things that happened in the trial, which I find really amusing, is that the central to the thing was a textbook, a creationist textbook called Of Pandas and People. And what they did was they took Of Pandas and People, the first edition of which was a creationist text, and they ran it through some software program where creationist and creationism would be replaced with intelligent design or designer or synonyms to that effect. And a woman named Barbara Forrest looked at an early draft of it, and the software program didn't work real well. So she got up on the stand and explained that there's a draft of the book that had things like intelligentsiaism and creationist design and just humiliate. And then, of course, one of the primary scientists, and I would point out one of the sources for Ann Coulter's take on all of this, a guy named Michael Behe, who got on the stand and was forced under cross-examination to admit that under his definition of science, astrology would be scientific.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a good thing for your case. And now it's all very funny, and we think it's done, but the fact remains that Dover, Pennsylvania, which is not a very big town, was really torn apart by this, and it cost them, because when you lose a suit in federal court, you have to pay damages. It cost that little school district about $12 million because they rode this hobby horse. So I think one of the lessons, I think, in the book is that there are real consequences to believing nonsense.
You know, as I read that discussion in the book, Charlie Pierce, I reminded myself or remembered how growing up, and I think you and I are roughly the same age, I saw the film Inherit the Wind, I think it was called, about the Scopes Monkey Trial.
Right, sure.
And I remember talking to my parents about it. This was in the 1960s. And they just sort of talked about this was like some sort of dark ages when people didn't believe in evolution. And my parents are hardly eggheads or certainly leftist or anything of the kind. I mean, this is just, they were, you know, it was just like, this is like some hard to explain period of people that actually deny science.
Well, it was such a bad beating that it alone drove fundamentalist Christianity out of politics for 50 years,
mm-hmm.
as you know. I mean, that's the defeat that drove it underground, and it didn't really come back until the late 1970s and early 1980s when the rise of what, you know, Sid Blumenthal calls the counter-establishment, other people call the new right, started re-energizing them behind. And one of the great lies in history is that we have a fundamentalist Christian coalition political bloc because of Roe versus Wade. That's not true. We have a fundamentalist Christian, Christian coalition bloc because of the orders that desegregated the public schools. And the fight was not over abortion that created this political movement. The fight was over the segregated academies in the South and whether or not they should be tax exempt. That's when the Christian Coalition first organized.
Our guest,
Casey Stengel used to say, you can look that up.
Our guest is Charles Pierce. And one place you start to look a lot of this up is in his book, Idiot America, How Stupidity Became a Virtue in the Land of the Free. Call us in at Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. We're live today. The number 333-9455 or toll free 1-800-222-9455. Charlie Pierce, you just mentioned the conservative movement. It's pretty clear in your book, and you talk about it, that this sort of movement conservatism, as you also call it at another point in the book, is a big part of enabling this sort of stupidity, in your view, this sort of...
Well, I mean, I think that if there's, you know, if there's a political afterlife and what we now call movement conservatism gets, you know, called before as what Grantland Rice said, the one great scorer, what it's going to have to answer for most is enabling ignorance and stupidity for political advantage. Most of the people in movement conservatism are not creationists, okay? They know better. They all went to Ivy League schools. One of the things you'll find out is the people like Laura Ingraham and Ann Coulter, who most deride Ivy League elitism, all went to Ivy League schools.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Marquette University, a nice little Jesuit school in the Midwest, okay? I didn't go to the Ivy League schools that these guys did. But what they do is they enable and encourage deliberate stupidity for political advantage. And I can't think of anything more dangerous and stupider than that.
Yeah, you know, as you say that, I'm wondering, because this has been a theme that's come up on our program before and in other authors we've had in the show, sort of this sort of almost pact with the devil of conservatism that you're describing. Because it is very much unlike the conservatism of, say, the 1950s or 60s. There are some elements of commonality, but there was, it was not this evangelical-based or faith-based conservatism. Are there conservatives out there now who are standing up to this, who are sort of drawing a line in the sand?
Not and surviving as political entities. Bob Inglis down in South Carolina, who I guarantee you there aren't three people in the Congress more conservative than him, he got beat in large part because he got up at a town meeting and suggested that his audience might want to turn off Glenn Beck for a couple of days. That's all he said, and that was enough to cost him a primary in South Carolina. So when the conservatives tell you that, you know, when the conservatives start defining their own fringe, hold on to your wallet, because I'm telling you, they're wrong. They're either wrong or they're lying to you.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Glenn Beck. You've had to do a special afterword in your new book about Glenn Beck. He's really come on to the scene in the last year and a half on Fox News as sort of their most – I think he's the one who gets, if I'm not mistaken, their younger demographic, meaning people under 70. And – but he is
You're going to make Sean Hannity cry because he is, after all, the hottie of the bunch.
Well, I do want to talk about Hannity because you have special words about him in the book as well. But Beck is in the afterword. Let's talk a little bit about Beck because he's really sort of the flavor of the month.
Sure.
What is the Beck shtick? I mean, what is so attractive about this guy? Why has he taken off so much?
Well, I believe it began because he was such a public geek show and people just stopped to watch. But his politics and his view of the world, or at least his ostensible view of the world, it's really hard to tell how much the guy really believes and how much is, you know, he's saying to make himself money, really comes out of old-fashioned 1950s and 1960s nut right-wing populism that descended from Father Coughlin and went through the John Birch Society and on and on and on and on and on. His, you know, intellectual amanuensis and Alexander Zychek from Salon, who's did great work on this and just recently released a book about it, traces it back to this guy, Cleon Skousen, who's this renegade Mormon historian who was so nutty that the Goldwater people wouldn't have him. But it seems that Beck has taken his worldview from this guy.
And he's rewriting, I mean, he's got his whole Beck U, I think he calls it now, where he's educating Americans on how to reimagine American history. Is that, and this is where he's getting his lines from?
Yeah, he's re-educating us in the kind of right-wing crackpottery of the 1950s and 60s. He doesn't talk about the Bilderberg Group. He doesn't talk about the Illuminati. But the invisible hands pulling strings that he's talking about are straight out of that and straight out of Father Coughlin before that. And because we do such a rotten job teaching people political history in this country, people look at it like it's a new thing. It's not a new thing. It's, in fact, a throwback beyond movement conservatism and beyond William F. Buckley, back to the people that Buckley ran out of conservatism in the 1950s.
And now they're running right back in.
Yes, sir.
Well, you know, along those lines, I was a guest on a radio program about a month ago, and I didn't know what the nature of the show was, an internet radio program. It was about a book I just recently wrote on journalism. And in the course of the show, it became clear that this program appealed to a lot of people who, I wouldn't necessarily say were far right, but I would say they were far out. Because they seemed to be anti-corporate on one hand, but they were also very much opposed to the Obama administration and were, to a person, convinced he was born in Kenya. And so after I heard people making these comments, I demanded an explanation of this birther thing, and I was astounded at the absolute 100% belief that this guy's born in Kenya, and there's no evidence that would convince them otherwise.
No, and that's, you know, I think that is... you know, that's one of the fundamentals of the book that I wrote, too, was that, you know, this complete lack of openness to empirical proof. I mean, there's a chapter in the book I do about global warming where I go to a place called Shishmaref, which is a little barrier island in Alaska that, you know, it's been continuously inhabited for 4,000 years. And Shishmaref, because there's no permafrost anymore and because the Chukchi Sea in which it is lodged doesn't freeze very long anymore, is being eaten by the sea. It's going to be gone in 20 years. There's nothing that can stop it. And if you go up to those people and try to argue that global warming isn't occurring, they'll laugh in your face. But, you know, you've got, you know, pundits in air-conditioned offices in Washington telling you that it's not happening. And you can't convince them otherwise. I mean, you've just seen the whole thing. That whole ClimateGate thing with the stolen emails, that just blew up in everybody's face a month ago. Mm-hmm. I guarantee you we'll still be talking about it in a year.
Our guest, Charles Pierce. The number here at Media Matters, 333-9455. Toll free, 1-800-222-9455. Charles Pierce writes about politics and sports and American life in a number of venues, including the Boston Globe Sunday Magazine. He's also a regular on the NPR programs Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me and Only a Game, which you've probably heard his voice before, and the author of the book we're discussing today, Idiot America, How Stupidity Became a Virtue in the Land of the Free, Charles P. Pierce, Doubleday Books, paperback edition just out this month. And it has a strong media argument. I want to make that clear because it's really the internet talk radio and cable television news that is the vehicle that makes this crack pottery, as you put it, mainstream and legitimate and to no small extent in a depressing manner is almost a dominant part of our political culture today.
Yeah, I think it's the dominant. I think the scary thing is it's the dominant part of our political culture that people pay attention to. I mean, people pay more attention to their favorite talk show host than they do their congressman. And this is not a system. You know, when we talked a little, you talked a little bit about the historical aspect of my book. One of the guiding lights for my book is James Madison. This is not a system designed by James Madison to operate on automatic pilot. You put this thing on automatic pilot and it flies into the ground. And yet you've got people who are more willing to believe Sean Hannity, who never got a degree from NYU, over a guy who's been doing climate science his whole life. We can't sustain ourselves as a democracy with enough people believing that.
You know, and you mentioned Sean Hannity. I mean, he is, he has one great talent you talk about in the book, which is he can make you think he knows what he's talking about when he talks about it.
Right, and he's very affable. I mean, he's apparently a very nice man.
Mm-hmm.
And my only exposure to him was at the same talk radio conference, the new media conference we talked about before, and he was shaking everybody's hand and posing for pictures, and he looked like a bouncer at an Irish bar. You know, that's who he looks like. I mean, I grew up with 50 Sean Hannitys. The problem is he's got a microphone, and what he says on the radio and on television is complete nonsense.
But it sure sounds good.
Yeah, well, it sounds good, and he sounds like a nice enough guy, and, you know, he's a guy that, you know, comes to your barbecue and helps you with the grill and drinks a couple of your beers, and then you start listening to him, and you're like, wow, you know, what color is this guy in your world?
Well, speaking of that world, the most interesting political figure, and she really comes in your book a little bit in the hardback, but now has become a central figure. And I guess as I read your book, it struck me that she almost personifies everything you're writing about in the book is Sarah Palin.
I tried not to make her the personification of it, but she's proving me wrong day after day. This is a woman whose entire political career is based on the fact that she doesn't know anything and that the people who know things are not to be trusted. But she doesn't, so she should be trusted, because she's more like you, i.e., you're stupid, so is she, therefore you guys meet. Her rise to any kind of prominence is both astonishing and depressing.
I mean, do you think she's since you're talking about Idiot America and stupidity being a virtue, is it plausible that Sarah Palin could be the next president of the United States?
I don't think so, because I don't think she's going to work hard enough to run. Running for president's hard work. Okay, this is a woman who found being governor of Alaska too taxing. I think what you've got is your first political reality celebrity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Bristol and Levi are now going to get married and have a reality show. She's making too much money and getting too much recognition and getting her ego stroked too hard to actually, you know, get out there and start giving the same speech in, you know, seven different cornfields in Iowa in the middle of winter on the same day. That's work. She doesn't like work. I think her fundamental sloth and lassitude is going to save us from the possibility.
More fun to be Glenn Beck than Mitch McConnell.
Oh, hell yes. Are you kidding? Or Mike Huckabee or Mitt Romney. It's a hell of a lot more fun to be almost anybody than Mitt Romney, but that's a whole different story. But, you know, she's not going to want to do that. Plus, the possibility is she goes out there, runs, and loses. Now she's a two-time loser. Now no one's paying attention to her.
And then, of course, there's the movement that didn't even begin until the first book had been completed, and that's the whole Tea Party movement.
Hey, it happened after the paperback, too.
My God.
If there's another edition of the paperback, I may have to rewrite the afterword again. Yeah, this is a pure product of exactly what I'm writing about. These are people who have heard things that they believe cannot be measured, and as long as people say them on television and loudly enough, they will be believed. I mean, take your government hands off my Medicare is a perfect illustration of what I'm talking about. You know, you simply cannot have a functioning democratic republic with people who believe that. It doesn't work. And yet it's scaring the hell out of everybody.
Our guest is Charles Pierce. As I said, our phone lines are open here at WILL-AM 580. 333-9455 is our local line. Toll free 1-800-222-9455. Let's go to the phone lines right now. Our first caller, line one, Urbana, you're on the air with Charles Pierce, author of Idiot America.
Hi. I'm quite happy to think of all the conservatives and talk show people and Glenn Beck and all that as being complete idiots. But it seems like they must have at least their own counterparts on the left. My experience over the years has not been that all of the people on the left are particularly bright either, or for that matter, all the scientists are particularly bright either. So does your book go into some idiots who are not strictly conservative or pseudo-conservative?
No, probably not, because as I explain in the book, whatever liberal idiots there are, they don't carry any weight. Liberal talk radio, with all due respect to Bob, is a joke, okay? And as somebody pointed out, looking at some of the stuff that's coming out of the House of Representatives, even in the 1970s, liberals didn't elect Abby Hoffman to Congress. I mean, you are talking about if you're talking about seriously enabled radicalism and stupidity, I would contend it exists primarily on the right now. It's certainly in its empowered sense it does. I mean, who is the liberal equivalent of Rand Paul? Who's the liberal equivalent of Glenn Beck?
Well, what about how do you deal with say a conservative scientist?
Pardon me?
How do you deal with a right-wing scientist?
A right-wing scientist?
Yeah.
Who would that be?
Well, I mean, they might not be in the on the talk radios, but
give me an example. I don't want to do something globally about right-wing scientists because I don't really know what you mean. You mean like global warming deniers?
Well, yeah, there are scientists who do that. There are scientists.
I mean, some of them are. I mean, some of them they don't do climate science, but some of them are scientists. Some of them are geologists. Some of them are meteorologists. I mean, that sounds like a TV weatherman, but that's not what I mean. But people who study meteorology, some of them are scientists. I just think that the overwhelming scientific consensus says they're wrong, and I think if you scratch beneath the surface, you're going to find a lot of corporate money, subsidizing their research. But I mean, when you say right wing scientists, I'm a little unclear what you mean.
Well, for example,
who's a left wing scientist?
We live primarily in Urbana. I would say it tends to go Democratic most of the time, but even in the faculty areas of the town, there are a substantial number of people voting for McCain and Palin.
Well, I don't understand how anybody can put Sarah Palin one thin heartbeat away from the presidency, but that's just me.
Okay.
I don't think just because there are two sides to every argument, they're both right. And I don't think because there are two sides to every argument, they're both worthy of respect.
Anybody who thinks Sarah Palin should be within a shouting distance
of the presidency of the United States is just stupid. I'm sorry. I don't want to mince words, but that's where you're at.
Well, I'm just saying that I don't think that all of the idiots are necessarily on the same side.
The ones causing most of the damage are.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, caller. Let's go back to our phone lines. Our guest again is Charles Pierce, author of Idiot America, How Stupidity Became a Virtue in the Land of the Free. Let's now go to line four, Bloomington. You're on the air.
Hello. I have to quote one of my favorite Nobel Prize winners, Anatole France. When 50,000 people believe a foolish thing, it is still a foolish thing.
I'm not going to argue with Anatole France.
Good for you. But
largely,
I'm just
actually because he's not around to argue with. So
yeah, but I just think that I hear so much of that these days. You know, I have a friend who's like all upset about the death tax. My friend is poor. She doesn't have a pot to piss in or a window to throw it out of, but she's really upset about the death tax. And I earned that money, and they have no right to tax me. And it's like, you're dead. It doesn't matter. And she doesn't even see that.
That's one of the great masterpieces, and sometimes you have to admire them. That's one of the great masterpieces of branding of all time, is calling that the death tax.
Yeah,
it affects less than 1% of the estates in the United States, what we're talking about. And yet you've got people, Elizabeth Warren, who I think we're all familiar with, who's a terrific woman from Harvard, who's, the expert on bankruptcy and trying to make her the head of the conservative. Her father, who had no money, right before his death, was worried about the death tax.
And she
was like one of the greatest living experts on bankruptcy law and taxation, kept going to him saying, Dad, don't worry about it because it doesn't apply to you. But he heard it on the radio.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's crazy because she's poor, she's suffering, she can't get any help, and yet she's getting all excited about the friggin' death tax. And I'm like, what on earth are you talking about?
Well, how many people have you seen at tea parties who are absolutely positively sure that their taxes have been raised in the last year when in fact they've gotten a tax cut?
Well, I haven't been to any tea parties, but from what I read about their social structure, a lot of them are either on unemployment or Social Security, which is like, what?
Well, I mean, I don't want to minimize, you know, the genuine economic insecurity that's out there in the country by ridiculing some of the folks who may be following the wrong leaders here.
Oh,
but at the same time, I mean, if you have under $250,000 a year, you got a tax cut. You really did.
Yeah.
No matter what you heard on the radio, you really did.
Yeah. Everybody who dies this year doesn't have to pay a state tax.
Right.
You know, we've lost, I don't know how many. There was something in the Chicago Tribune about it. Well, thank you. I'm going to have to read your book. It sounds really good, and I probably heard you on Don't Tell Me. But
you probably did, but Paul Pounsgood and I are, like, indistinguishable, our voices, so.
So, but anyway, really appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much, caller from Bloomington. And let's go to our next caller now, who's been waiting patiently. Line 2, Spring Bay, you're on the air with Charles Pierce, author of Idiot America.
Yeah, good afternoon. Bay, is your book a companion piece to that wonderful piece of entertainment, Idiocracy?
No, but it was, I've been asked whether I've seen the movie, and the answer is no. I should get around to seeing it, though.
I enjoyed it very much. I thought it was really a lot of fun.
There's a whole kind of literature to it. Al Gore wrote a book about it. Susan Jacoby wrote a book called The Age of American Unreason that I recommend to everyone.
She's been a guest on the show.
Mine is sort of Susan Jacoby's book with jokes.
The thing that really gets me is, as you could tell listening to this program, I enjoy talking about politics and current events. And it seems to me, in a democracy, we should be able to have some pretty good conversations on that. But every time I talk with people who are these kind of right-wingers, they have absolutely nothing to back up their arguments. They have no information. They can't get past name-calling. The level of the conversation is really very boring. And it seems that in a democracy, we really need to strengthen our critical thinking and our awareness and our level of informative content. I saw a sign in front of a church before the last election. It said, register, pray, vote. And I thought, well, maybe you should add read in there. Anyway, I'll get off and listen to the rest of the conversation. Nice talking with you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, caller. Our guest today is Charles Pierce, author of Idiot America, How Stupidity Became a Virtue in the Land of the Free. Charles Pierce writes about basketball, among other things. I've seen your work in the Globe. And writes about politics and is oftentimes on NPR game shows. Let's see, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and Only a Game. The number here, 333-9455. Toll free, 1-800-222-9455. Let's go back to the phone lines now. Line 3, Peoria, you're on the air with Charlie Pierce.
Hi. Champaign's mayor doesn't believe that Obama was born in the United States, but that's a different issue. I want to ask...
Wait, I'm sorry, I lost the first part of that. What?
I think wasn't Champaign's mayor believes that Obama was born in Canada, in Kenya?
Champaign's mayor does?
I think that's true. I think
oh, my Lord.
I don't know for sure.
There's more trouble out there than I thought.
Well, I wanted to ask about... I think his name is Frank Lutz.
The pollster, the focus group guy. Yeah.
Yeah, and he is, he's kind of like the Machiavelli. I think Hannity and those people are just stupid, but he's the person who says to them, don't say global warming, say climate change. And that phrase crept into the mainstream, networks. And I don't know, you talk about branding like death tax. He may have come up with that, too.
He got dinged up very badly because he was involved with Jack Abramoff. So he lost his influence for a while. But I think Frank's on his way back. And remarkably, Frank gets a lot of run on the mainstream cable networks, even though he's purely a propagandist.
Yes.
I mean, he's not a science. You know, he's not a student of human behavior or anything else. He's a propagandist. He twists the language for political purposes. And yet, you know, he's given the kind of respectability on television that he probably doesn't deserve. But you're right to point out his influence, because he has been influential.
Yeah. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, caller. And you know, before we go, we've got a couple callers waiting patiently. I'm going to get to them in a second. But I want you to talk for a second, Charlie Pierce, about James Madison. He plays, you know, I've studied him a lot for my work on history journalism. And he's been very influential in my work. And your book is really based on sort of a Madisonian vision. What is it about Madison that you think makes him so important that people today ought to know about him?
Well, first, a couple of things. Number one, I think he's the most underrated of the founding fathers. And I think he deliberately wanted that way. He was the little guy that nobody paid attention to, who was taking a bunch of notes and sitting in the corner. And meanwhile, he is the only person in the history of this country who actually overthrew the government. And he did it by being smarter than everyone else. He didn't do it with guns, didn't do it by yelling at people. He did it by being prepared and purely with his intellect. If you see the way he maneuvered at the Constitutional Convention to essentially throw the Articles of Confederation out the window when no one was looking, he was a brilliant, brilliant man. And one of the things that was an article of faith with him in his appeal for a national university, he wanted what he called an institution of enlightened preceptors. And I will grant you, he only meant white property-owning males at the time, but he set this landmine that was bound to go off and include everyone sooner or later. He did not believe this country could run on automatic pilot. This country does not function if the great majority of people in it aren't paying attention or are paying attention to the wrong things. And he was very adamant about that till the last day he lived.
Let's
and
go.
He must have had some charisma because, you know, he won the heart of the, you know, preeminent hottie of the time.
Let's go back to our phone lines. Our guest, Charles Pierce, author of Idiot America, just out by Doubleday, the paperback version. Let's now go to line one. Champagne, you're on the air.
Okay. Can you hear me okay?
We can.
Good. Three quick comments or questions. What was the name of the author that influenced Beck? And there's a book, you mentioned a book tracing this author.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
What was the name of the author that influenced Beck? You mentioned a Mormon.
Oh, Cleon Skousen. Skousen.
Skousen. Okay. And there's a bit.
And his first name is Cleon. Cleon.
Got it. And there's a book about that, or?
Yeah, there's a new book by a guy named Alexander Zaitchik, Zaitchik, about Beck's relationship with Cleon Skousen. There's also, if you go to salon.com, and I'm plugging someone else here, but only because he did great work. If you go to salon.com, you can find the series that Alexander Zaitchik did that led to this book.
Zaitchik.
That will give you a good idea of what I'm talking about.
How is that spelled real quick again?
Zaitchik, Zaitchik.
Okay. And two, when it comes to Beck, I've tried listening and watching him. I find him intellectually incoherent. It just doesn't make sense to me. And I wonder, the Latin phrase cui bono, what does his presentations, his conspiracy theories that so many people seem to fall into, who does it ultimately benefit?
Well, it ultimately benefits those centers of power in our society, be they political or economic or whatever, that profit from people being either distracted or not paying attention at all.
So in some ways, he's simply, in my opinion, then a propagandist for extremely wealthy.
In some way, he's a functionary for the people for whom Fox News is a propaganda outlet, basically. I think he's a little bit more entertaining. He has moments where he's clearly in. I mean, either he's a public lunatic or he plays one on TV. There's no third alternative.
Okay. And very quickly, I saw a little thing on the Michigan militia.
Yeah.
And I think half the guys, if not all of them, were on unemployment compensation, but they still believe the government should have no. There should be no government.
Yeah. I mean, once again, the creation of a kind of general political dissonance in the country is to the advantage of people who are trying to essentially have this country function as an oligarchy.
Okay. Well,
the more people you can confuse, the more people you can distract, the fewer people are likely to question what you do.
Okay. Well, I'll hang up with another caller.
Well, thank you very much, caller. Let's go now to line two, Urbana. You're on Media Matters with our guest, Charles Pierce, author of Idiot America.
Hi there. I think my comments and question, you know, might be kind of preaching to the choir because I know, you know, the show is all about corporate-owned media. But, we can laugh about how stupid these people are, but I find it very scary because just the Sarah Palin thing, how fast the Tea Party movement has completely exploded. Whatever they're doing is working, and I find it very scary because the left does not have any voice. Like you mentioned, we're irrelevant. And so I guess the million-dollar question is, what can we do about this before this just completely takes over the country? Because I find it very scary.
First of all, ma'am, I'm not laughing at any of this. I think it's a very serious problem. Second of all, let's see how effective they are. Their track record in the Tea Party itself, track record in elections so far is not that terrific. And before anyone points to Scott Brown up here in Massachusetts, he ran away from the Tea Party. That's how he got elected. Am I concerned of this, you know, kind of tsunami of ignorance that's like coursing through the politics? Yes, but let's just see how electorally effective it is before we really start getting nervous.
Charles Pierce, are you a little worried that let me ask you a better way. What's your assessment of the Obama administration, the Democrats in power? How good of a job have they done politically to take advantage of their electoral landslide wins in 2008?
Not very, and I understand that there are reasons for that beyond their control, and I appreciate that. At the same time, I think his fundamental problem as a politician has always been that he overrates the country as a political entity, he overrates us as a political people, and he overrates the notion that if you just appeal to the angels of our better nature, we'll all start pulling together for the common good. And I don't think he was prepared at all for the resistance he was going to get. And that's where I think his essential political acumen can come under question.
Well, let's go back to the phone lines now. Our guest on Media Matters today, Charles Pierce, author of Idiot America, the paperback version by Doubleday, just out last month. Let's now go to line four, Moultrie County. You're on the air.
I'm enjoying your program, and I have to agree with just about everything that's being said. But earlier in the program, you mentioned this new Black Panther incident, and this has been going around at work, and I hadn't heard about this. I did find on the web that it occurred in 2008, but I haven't been able to get a clear story. Can you take a few moments and tell me what that was all about?
Well, okay, I'll do the best I can off the top here. In 2008, there were three guys who showed up at a polling place in Philadelphia calling themselves the new Black Panther Party. Basically, they stood around. One of them had what looked like a nightstick. The Bush Department of Justice looked into it, decided not to bring a criminal case, brought a civil suit, at which point the administration's changed over, and I guess it was the Obama administration that finally, you know, settled the civil suit against these folks. In the recent weeks, a guy named J. Christian Adams, who is kind of a Republican hack who worked at the FEC, or the Department of Justice, while the Elections Division was being utterly politicized by the Bush administration, has started to pop up all over the place, primarily on Fox News, saying that the Obama administration and Eric Holder have refused to prosecute this essentially because these are black folks, and they don't want to deal with that. What he's talking about is an absolute lie. It's betrayed by any fact that's available in the public record. However, Fox News has been beating it like a tin drum, and now you're starting to hear people say that you take it seriously because, quote unquote, people are buzzing about it. That's the story.
and as you point out in the book, Charlie Pierce, this is the same thing that happened with evolution and with global warming, is that, you know, once you create enough buzz, then it's a legitimate story and it's got to be covered regardless of the evidence.
Yeah, if your cover, and we should have learned this, by the way, from a lot of the stuff that went on in the Clinton administration, if you're covering the story, you're just covering the reaction to it. You're legitimizing the story, whether there's any truth to the story or not. And that's a real problem for people in my business and people in the upper echelons of my business who are going to have to figure out how to handle it, because otherwise you just get played all the time.
Okay, caller, I think we've lost that caller. Let's go to our next caller now, line 3, Champagne. You're on the air with Charlie Pierce, author of Idiot America.
Yes, thank you. I'd like you to get around to the 3 points of the book. I wrote down number 3, but I like the other 2 before you quit.
Well, do you have another question or comment? Why don't you do that, and then we'll have Charlie give all 3 of the great premises.
No, I don't have another
Okay.
comment.
Well, thank you very much, caller. Charlie, there were 3 great premises.
I'm going to improvise it because I don't have a copy of my book with me. The first one is anything can be true if someone says it loudly enough. The second one is anything can be true if someone says it on television.
Well, that's close enough, actually. I've got them written down here because they're in my notes. Line 1 is any theory is valid if you can sell something successfully.
Right.
Or gets ratings. And number 2 is anything is true if you say it loudly enough.
And on television.
Oh, yeah, I didn't write that part down. And then the third great premise that you said before is fact is whatever people believe, and if enough people believe it, it becomes true.
Exactly. Truth is measured by how fervently they believe it. Right?
Yeah. You know, and that really guides the book, Idiot America, the discussion of it. And you lay that out at the beginning of the book and go through it. You know, again, it seems that what we're in now, too, in this whole period that you're describing in the book is a golden age for crackpot conspiracy theories being taken seriously. And you give in the book, Charlie, you discuss the 9/11 conspiracy theory, and everyone knows about the Twin Towers and that theory.
Yeah.
But you talk about Alec Rawls, and that was actually, I was not familiar with this episode, but I thought it was very illuminating to the points you're making. Mention the Alec Rawls theory.
Yeah, they're building a memorial to the Flight 93 passengers in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. And it's designed as kind of a remembrance park. And somebody, Alec Rawls, who's the son of John Rawls, the great liberal philosopher, got there and realized that the thing was in the shape of a crescent. It's sort of, you know, it's an arc. It's very much like a lot of other monuments you see in Washington. He started this internet boom about how it was really somehow a tribute to the hijackers. And it got so serious that the National Park Service had to actually respond to it, and they had to change the design. Michelle Malkin, noted crackpot, got on this bandwagon too, and it caused some real damage and some real heartbreak and some real ill feeling among the survivors of the passage of Flight 93 in Pennsylvania. And it, you know, as I said, you know, believing nonsense can do some real hurt.
You know, I must ask you, and getting back to the point we talked about earlier, Charlie, you know, the Republican Party now, as you just pointed out, has pretty much been captive to the Tea Party at this point, and to, you know, people in the party reluctant to really go against it outward vocally for fear of their jobs and their careers. If you were, you know, there are lots of people who are Republicans in this country who are probably share some of your concerns, if not all of your political views. You know, what are they to do? Or what are we as a country to do if one of our political parties is basically a captive of intelligent design
and climate change
deniers?
The one obvious thing to do, and I think that the Democrats and Barack Obama between 2006 and 2008 missed a great opportunity to do this, is to crush the party until it realizes the error of its own ways. And to disempower the party until it disenthralls itself from the crazy people. And because they did not do that between 2006 and 2009, the crazy people are even more empowered than they were before. I mean, John McCain is having to run the election of his life against J.D. Haworth, who was reputed to be, by all sides, one of the dumbest men in the history of the House of Representatives. And John McCain is out there running a life and death race. He's probably going to win, but he shouldn't have to even campaign. And what happened was the Democrats didn't enforce the obvious political majorities that they had gained in the country between 2006 and 2008, and simply deny these people any political advantage until they stop believing the crazy stuff. And that's what could have happened. That's what happened with the Democrats. When the Democrats were perceived to have gone all off the road to the left-hand side in the 1970s, the Republicans put their boot in the neck and crushed them until the Democrats invented the DLC and reinvented themselves as a semi-corporate party. I don't think that's a good idea, but that's what happened.
Our guest, Charlie Pierce. This is Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. We've only got a few minutes left here on the show. Charlie Pierce is the author of the book, Idiot America, How Stupidity Became a Virtue in the Land of the Free, paperback edition just out by Doubleday. I can assure everyone it is a truly enjoyable read. In fact, Charlie, I'm using this in one of my classes this fall.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thanks, Bob.
Yeah, well, you can send me the check. It won't be much, unfortunately, but it'll pay for like a hot dog at a Celtics game.
Excellent.
And, you know, let's talk about what are some of the hopeful signs, if there are hopeful signs. What gives you enthusiasm, if anything, as you look around the landscape of this country today?
Well, I think initially the election of Barack Obama, I thought, was a tremendous moment because it required people to put a lot of garbage aside and vote. So, and I'm still a little bit optimistic about that. I'm optimistic about some elements of the Internet. I think that the good parts of the Internet are tremendous. I'm not too optimistic about the media in general, and I don't have to preach this to you. I think the consolidation has been an awful idea. I think it's been enormously destructive to us both as a political people and to a nation as a whole. And I really don't know what the solution is to that.
Yeah, and
I don't see anybody with any power trying to make any difference in that regard.
And, you know, everything you talk about, too, I think if, in fact, our economy goes into a double-dip recession or the Great Recession continues or gets worse, or we just enjoy a period of stagnation for the next several years with high unemployment, it seems that historically the evidence is pretty clear. Moments like this are always great openings to crackpots and conspiracy theorists, you know, and it seems like the times we're in are conducive to that approach to the world.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the 1930s and you look at Alan Brinkley's great books, Voices of Disunion, with Father Coughlin, Huey Long, and I can't remember who the third one was. But, you know, that's when number one, active social movements from the left begin. But at the same time, that's when countries become more polarized and not less.
Well, Charlie Pierce, what are you working on nowadays? Do you have another book project?
We're talking about it. I don't have anything I want to say about it right now. My agent and I are fighting over what the next book is, but I suspect it's going to be something along the same thematic lines, or maybe more precisely aimed at what's happening in the Republican Party. But I'm not really sure. But you'll be the first to know, Bob. I'll tell you.
Well, yeah, we'll have you on the show then when it is done. Let me ask you about. One other thing about the Obama administration. You make an issue in the book, and I think it's a very nice section of the book, talking about the build-up to the Iraq War and the justification for it and the lack of evidence for it. Yet here we are in the second, you know, entering the midway through the second year of the Democratic administration, and the policies of the Bush administration with regard to Afghanistan and Iraq have, as far as I can tell, more or less continued. Is this something that surprises you?
I'm a little bit surprised that he has not moved more strongly on the civil liberties, you know, the civil liberties atrocities that came out of that particular exercise. If you wanted to point to the one thing I'm most disappointed at in him is that is that the kind of tepid response. And this is what happens if you don't hold people accountable. There are criminals out there who are not being held accountable. And once you do that, you've rendered yourself impotent politically. You can't very well yell about it anymore. If you're not bringing people before the bar of justice, you can't yell about why people get away with this stuff. So, yeah.
And then, Charlie, we've only got about 45 seconds left. One of the things I like to ask my guests periodically is what news media they use to stay on top of the world, where they go to every day or every week to find out what's happening that they consider reliable and useful and informative. What's your media diet?
Well, I read both Boston newspapers every day. I read the New York Times maybe two or three times a week. I read it on Sunday every week. And then I bounce around the Internet. You know, I have a number of blogs that I read, some for entertainment, some for information. I try to read as many right-wing blogs as I can just to keep an idea of what's going on.
Do you have a
favorite blog?
Favorite right-wing blog.
A favorite right-wing blog?
Yeah.
Oh, you got it. You have to go with Town Hall. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just a monkey house. I mean, for pure entertainment, you can't beat Town Hall. Even NRO Online occasionally tries to be serious. But Town Hall is just where people let their freak flag fly.
Hey, Charlie Pierce, I hear the band tuning up the background. That means they want to get me out of the studio. Thank you so much for joining us today to talk about your book, Idiot America.
I appreciate it, Bob.
Good luck with the book. And I want to thank Melissa Trentz for my producer, Kyle Krohoff for working the board. I'm Bob McChesney. We'll be back in 167 hours. Until then, everyone, have a great week. Bye-bye.
or ballroom dance, private instruction for social or competitive dancing, weddings or other special events, lessons for singles or couples, beginners or advanced of all ages. Information at 378-4601 or on your web, search at Mike Weaver Ballroom Dance.
In the weather forecast for Champaign-Urbana, hot and humid today with partly sunny skies and scattered showers and thunderstorms, the high around 90 degrees, heat index readings around 100. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms in the evening, low around 70 degrees. Monday, partly sunny with a 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms, the high around